Blog Talk Radio.
The Mutual UFO Network was established in 1969 as a nonprofit volunteer organization dedicated to the scientific study of UFOs for the benefit of humanity. MUFON's goals are to objectively investigate UFO sightings and collect the data in the MUFON database for use by researchers worldwide, and to educate the public on the UFO phenomenon and its potential impact on society. The Mutual UFO Network is recognized as the leading UFO research and investigative organization on the planet, thanks to MUFON's vast network of dedicated volunteers, like-minded individuals who share the same interest in being part of a group that has brought UFO investigations into the new millennium. Are you interested in becoming a member of MUFON? There's never been a better time to join the network. So for more information, log on to MUFON.com. That's www.mufon.com.
Hello, world. This is TJ Morris, and tonight is a special night. We have a guest calling in from the 412 area code that's going to enlighten us about various things. But our heading tonight is paranormal research, and it's also women's psychic goddesses. I have a feeling that this may not be a woman, but I know Janet's here, and she's a woman, and she knows all about psychic goddesses. So our tags are Spiritual Synergism, Ascension Age Now, WOW, Ascension Age 2012, Stargate to the Cosmos Conference, Metaphysics. We're under Paranormal tonight, which is my favorite topic, besides spirituality, of course. Visibility is to everyone. The duration's 120 minutes, and it's Tuesday, September 4th, 2012, at 2000 hours. It's a great day to be alive. So I'm going to let Janet introduce herself and then tell us who may be calling in with a 412 area code. Janet, are you there?
Yes. Hi, TJ. It's Janet Tierlesson calling live from Maui, Hawaii, at the Ascension Center at the foothills of the West Maui Mountains. The last property, there's 12 miles of jungle behind us. So our special guest tonight, I guess it's we're going to have to maybe divert a little bit from our original plans, is my brother, Bill Thompson, who I just love and adore, and he's my older brother, older by 7 years. And his specialty is ufology, and with a special focus on the Anunnaki and the works of Zechariah Sitchin and other ancient astronaut aliens researchers. And he has a special twist, and I always love hearing his points of view on this. The field is quite big, and there's all these people with different variations on the theme. But with that being said, how about you hit the button you need to and teleport Bill onto the show today?
Okay, well, stand by, Bill. We're going to teleport you in here, if I can find my teleporter button. We've come a long way since he's been around the last time. So I'll change the heading from Paranormal Research Women Psychic Goddesses, since he's going to be here. And we'll just make it TJ Morris Paranormal Research. How's that for the night?
Excellent.
So we won't embarrass him, you know, and he can talk all about the paranormal research. Okay. Now you pull him back in. Great. Here we go. Okay, let's do the little doorbell thingy they use on the Star Trek. All right. Bill,
thank you. Boy, I do feel like I'm on Star Trek. Good evening, everyone. Greetings
from where?
Avalon. The fabled band of Avalon.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's right. It's Sir Wilhelm, isn't it?
Yes,
Sir
it is. Wilhelm. And I live in the borough of Avalon, which, you know, I love to think is more than a coincidence.
That is
odd,
isn't it?
Too, Bill. I go, when people go, where were you born and raised? And I go, Avalon. It's a suburb of Pittsburgh.
And they're like, yeah, right.
Avalon. And they go, yeah, right. I go, no, I'm from Avalon. It's great.
Were you born in Avalon? Seriously?
Yep. Well, actually, technically, we were born in the Bellevue Suburban General Hospital, which there's a little tiny bridge that goes from Avalon to Bellevue. So it's the first building as you head to Bellevue off of Jackman Avenue. So,
nice.
But I don't know if that's still, is that still a hospital bill? It was a really tiny.
Yeah, that was a hospital, but I think legally speaking, since our parents resided in Avalon, that's our legal place of birth.
Yeah, place of birth is Bellevue, and where we were raised was Avalon.
Right.
Well, we're glad you came today. Janet and I always have interesting things to talk about, but we've got a huge audience we've created in just, I guess, let's say June 3rd, July, August. So June, July, and August. So 3 months. We're doing pretty good, and we're doubling every month, Bill. So we're doing something right. Yeah, we're doing something right. And, you know, sometimes are very deep, and other times are very spiritual, and other times are very psychic. And I guess if you can, I'd love to talk about some mysteries and stuff, because I just love Merlin and Avalon and King Arthur, and you're Sir Wilhelm, right?
Great. And, that's my handle on blogging.
Your handle on blogging. Cool.
Yeah.
Tell us about your blogging, and let's sort of go... I think we covered your basic history from high school forward last time, didn't we, when you were on?
Yeah, I think we covered some of that, yeah. Well, let me go with this birth thing for a minute here because, you know, I don't think that really it's a coincidence where people were born. You know, I think there's, you know, that's part of our karma and our destiny is tied into that because what I like to point often is that if you look at history, you look at the tyrants of history, like Napoleon, for instance. He was born in Corsica, but he became emperor of France. Stalin was from Georgia, but he became the dictator of the Soviet Union and headquartered in Russia. Hitler was from Austria, but he became dictator of Germany. And I think there's a pattern here. And if you believe as I do, and this one, you ask what I blog about, one of my favorite subjects in blogging is Obama's birth. You know, and, you know, way back when Hillary Clinton, the first birther, brought up the subject, she was questioning whether Obama's father was born in his country. And if you look at the documentation, it says on his birth certificate, the one he posted online, that his father was born in Kenya, East Africa. Okay. Now, since then, to jump ahead a ways, there's been a lot of research done since then, and the evidence is gathering and pointing more and more to the fact that he was actually born in Kenya himself.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he was not born in Hawaii. And,
so can they track their college records? Can't they get that from, I guess, University of Hawaii because they were studying Russian there?
Well, the problem is that Obama has paid millions of dollars to seal away much of his personal records, okay, which is why people became focused on his birth certificate because he couldn't pay to seal that away. On the other hand, you know, he has found out other ways to have people obstruct access to that. The Hawaiian officials have cooperated with obstructing access to his birth certificate.
Let me ask a question, though. From what I recall being taught in schools, you just have to have one parent that's an American citizen.
That's great. But if you are familiar with Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5 of the Constitution, the qualifications for president and vice president only is that one of the things is they have to be a natural-born citizen.
Right,
okay?
But you are a natural-born citizen as long as one of your two parents is natural-born.
No, it has to be both your
citizen.
Parents.
We have all these military people, and children are always being born, you know, across the seas, but one or both of their parents, if either of their parents are American citizens, those children are American citizens. That's what I was taught in high school.
Well, you
so
were taught wrong. You were taught wrong. Because the definition of a natural-born citizen, if you go back to the Founding Fathers and what they wrote about it, what they wrote about, the key word is natural. And they wanted the birth to be natural in the sense that it was not subject to the laws of men. In other words...
Not C-section.
In other words, both parents had to be citizens of the country, and the person had to be born in the country of two citizens of that country for it to be a natural born citizen.
So what about all these poor children that are being born overseas because their parents are stationed there? Are they now in jeopardy of their citizenship?
No, they're not. It's not citizen. It's easy to be a citizen. We're talking about two different things here. That's what you have to get clear in your mind.
Okay, a natural-born citizen. And I thought my understanding was that a natural-born citizen was one of the – one parent was – and then the other citizens –
No, it has to be both parents. That's the key difference.
And taken oath. So what are the citizens called, those who go on and become a citizen? They were born and raised –
You can be naturalized. You can be a citizen born of one parent and still be a citizen. In fact, if you look at
you can have dual citizenship,
if you look at
if
you look at the details of Obama's birth in Kenya, he if his mother would have been older, she was only 17 when she gave birth, so she was not old enough, according to the law, to bestow citizenship on her son, because she gave birth in a foreign country. And it was not. Now, if you're an American citizen, you're stationed overseas, yes, there is that technicality. If you're stationed on a base overseas, that's considered American territory, and you are considered a citizen. And also, if you go back to the 08 campaign, you should know that there was questions about McCain's citizenships, because he was born in a Panama Canal zone when both his parents were stationed there.
Right.
So what they did was they went to the Senate and they asked for clarification on this. And whether it was legal or not, the Senate passed a resolution stating that McCain was eligible to be a presidential candidate, because they decided that since he was born in the canal zone, that was sufficient. Okay?
Well, one of the things that we discovered, Bill, and we've got to is not do politics. our people just leave our chat room. They politics and food.
Okay,
so
I didn't intend to carry it that far.
Okay.
I was trying to make it a paranormal subject by pointing out how tyrants are born, you know, in our countries other than they wind up ruling and becoming tyrants in, and there's a pattern there, you know, and you have to wonder about, you know, how is that can't be a coincidence.
So tell me your theory on that, because that is, you're observing this. What do you think is making this happen, that these people that are not born in the countries that they end up ruling, I mean, what happens?
Well, I see this is something I've had to back in my mind, and I've been trying to put together a theory on it. But, you know, it has to do something to do with karma and destiny, and you know, there's when we're born, everyone that's born, if you believe in karma, you know that your life is basically planned for you, the most important elements. You have a certain amount of free will.
Right.
But there's certain points in your life that are destiny points, and those are predetermined. So, you know, for some reason, and I really can't say. I mean, maybe there's some other people that can join the discussion out there that could maybe help with this theory, develop this theory, but there's some pattern, there's some reason why these people are born outside the countries, in different countries, and then become tyrants in these other countries. And you can go back into history and you think about Alexander the Great. I mean, he conquered the world. He was from Greece, but he wound up ruling a good portion of the world. And then there was other conquerors like Genghis Khan, you know, and Attila the Hun that conquered and ruled in other parts of the world from where they started from.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, from the extraterrestrial standpoint, maybe TJ can help me. Maybe we can just kind of theorize on this. You know, it doesn't seem that any of these governing systems that humanity has created really work very well. There's always someone that's getting their rights stepped on, their toes stepped on, and someone else telling everybody else how they should or shouldn't live their lives. And there's a great portion of our population that is incarcerated, and that seems to be big business, and it's got nothing to do with right or wrong or good or bad, or it's none of anybody else's business, you know. So we've got sex workers and people that are doing, you know, victimless crimes, you know. And so there's something obviously gone wrong with our society, and then we have the greater number of the entire planet is impoverished, so many, you know, millions of people die every day from starvation, or they're suffering, And so we need to look at other systems of governance rather than splitting hairs and arguing semantics. That's my thought. Do either of you have a thought on what would be a better system for this planet? And we've also looked at some of the extraterrestrial ideas that they're getting through to us through people that have supposedly had contact, like Alex Collier and George Casabellas and some other people. And so it's kind of getting outside of the box. Do you have any comments? All right, well, we can drop the Constitution,
and we can go to like beliefs, perceptions, assumptions, moods, and expectations, because when you're here on Earth, we've got this permanent perceiver, right? Because we have to perceive, and then what we're perceiving is our own inner awareness and our outer awareness, and that means we have to project. That, you know, Janet, you and I always talk about mirroring on each other, but the object of perception is sort of what we're discussing. And if you take it all the way back down to, you know, when you were born a baby, which is what he started off with Avalon, you know, why were you born? And why were you born in Avalon? And a baby changes to a child. So the paranormal way, spiritual way to think of it is that identity transforms. Spiritually, you know, we discuss emotional, psychological, mental. That's why we have so many friends that are in therapy and psychology. But now you can also remember what Scientology has done to the world. And I was watching a couple of those today, and I thought, oh, that'd be a good topic tonight. But then I didn't know Bill was coming on or what we'd talk about. But, Bill, I'm so glad you did, because somehow, you know, you came and you were the first guy that joined them. I mean, Ning. Janet started in Ning first, so I give her credit for that. I used Ning a long time ago, but they've come a long way, and it makes it easier for us on websites. So we each have our own Ning now, so you're number one. And, you know, identity, for some reason, even though your sister had a Ning and I had a Ning, for some reason you joined mine first, but probably because I sent it out to all the local people that had been on the radio first. And existence is consciously evolving. So when we expand our consciousness through the death and the birth, life, canal, whatever you want to say, we come in constant flux. And this is something that Deepak Chopra handles, if y'all, you know, not to take the focus off of me, Janet, and Bill, because we're three trying to create, you know, our own audience here on our own radio show. But Deepak Chopra has his on, and he's pretty cool. And he goes really in-depth about all this esoteric spirituality, and he says that death is strictly is life. In other words, you have to transcend, and everything transcends, just like we go from a baby to a child to an adolescent, and an adolescent to a young adult. And if you think about it, it makes sense, because we're constantly changing, and every day we're changing. And I wrote that on Janet's blog today, if you get a chance to read it. It's a real – I didn't write very long. I tried to do something new, Bill. I usually write, 2,000 or 3,000, at least 2,000 words. So
yeah,
I don't know, it's less than 500. But it's short because, you know, to make it easy. But discussing all this, how do we perceive – and, Janet, I don't know that I have an answer, just because I've had – extraterrestrial experiences on board a ship. I mean, I still remember, you know, my first memory is being a little girl on a ship looking down at myself on Earth. So why was I born in Wichita Parish? I know I was told I was born in St. Francis Hospital, and I was told, you know, and I know I've got a birth certificate, but I don't know any of that, except I was told to believe like that, just like I was told to believe I was a Christian. I was born in the church. So it's all... You know, we come in, if I was born in Africa, and I think that's his point, why is it a karma debt? And I haven't, you know, go ahead, Bill, what's your hypothesis or theory? What?
Uh-oh, we lost. Are you there, Bill?
Uh-oh, are you calling in on Skype maybe? I don't know.
Oh, no, I'm here. I got cut off, but I'm back.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. So I don't know what you heard, but we're going back to this whole thing about being born certain places and the karma of that. And you started by saying that that you were born in Avalon, and that had some significance. What does that mean to you, being born in Avalon?
Well, I can only, you know, I go back to my youth, and even right up to today, I've always felt an affinity for the Arthurian legends, you know, and,
cool.
Camelot and Avalon and all that. So, you know, I think that's why, you know, I like role-playing so much, and then it just seemed like a very karmic or destined thing that happened, you know, a handle I used in role-playing, I started using in blogging, and it's still with me. So,
well, where do you role-play? Because I never got into that. Not that I didn't want to. I checked into Second Life. Is that what it's called, Second Life? But you mean with the cards and stuff? Because I had the books, and I used to help little kids and support them and buy them these toy things to be role-playing. Well, but these games are outrageous now. They're so visual. I was looking at some today on my husband's computer. But tell me about this role-playing. A lot of people maybe were too busy in college doing law, history, diplomacy, or whatever to get into it. What is it?
Usually done with paper and pencil. The original role-playing game, the first one, was Dungeons and Dragons, and I played that one. And then there was a similar game that was put up by a company called SPI called Dragon Quest, which I preferred because you could fight the battles more tactically on a hex grid using the miniatures. But the real heart of the game is role-playing, and that's where you actually try and put yourself into the role and talk and act like the person that you're playing. And, you know, the better of an actor you are, the better a role player you are, naturally. And, you know, but I've noticed that people tend to play characters that they have an affinity for in their real life, you know. Like, I could never bring myself to play bad guys or thieves, or, you know, which are real popular. And I always wanted to be the knight in shining armor.
I
always wanted to be the good guy, and I feel like that, you know, came from somewhere in my past, possibly previous life somewhere. But you know, even today, I try to be the good guy. I can't bring myself to play bad guys very well or very often.
Do you work out and try to be a muscle guy, or you know, are you like the knight in the white shining armor? Or
no, I was never very big, but I was pretty athletic when I was young. I was in good shape for a long time. But as I got older and, you know, I lost shape and, you know, I became more sedentary, although I never, as long as I was a letter carrier, I had to be in reasonably good shape to carry the mail. So I never got completely out of shape. But, no, I was never a big, strong guy. And I think that was part of it, too. You know, I wanted to be something I wasn't, you know, a big, strong knight.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and here I am, 5'11", 250 pounds, always wanting to be a petite, little blonde, blue-eyed girl, Janet, right?
Right.
That's Janet. So, yeah, it's funny. And when I had, always growing up, I had, like, dark brown, almost black hair. It's pure white now. And be careful what you ask for, folks, because I always wanted to be a platinum blonde, and I always wanted to be Marilyn Monroe. But it's so funny because having black hair, I don't know, Janet, you probably never wanted to be a brunette or a red-haired, but all my life I wanted to be a blonde. And I've had pure white hair now for half my life at least. It's 30 in my, well, probably 40s. Because
right.
I've got pictures of the military with dark brown hair. So I think we always want something we don't have, and that may be part of our karma too. But how do we learn all this stuff, you know? And role-playing apparently feel something. It's called RPG, right? Do you play the Avalon game, game, Avalon?
Now I play games online, and I've played many different games, and you know, but I always try and pick a character, a good character. You know, sometimes it's not necessarily a knight, but it's a good character, a fighter, somebody that fights for good. Sometimes I'll play a wizard.
This Avalon, first of its kind, 20th anniversary, 1989 to 2009. Are you into that? What do I have to do? I mean, tell me about
it.
I've never played one.
Hey, let him tell you which ones he plays.
I don't
know. Okay. What ones?
I started out with a game called EverQuest, and then I moved to EverQuest 2, and then to World of Warcraft and Lord of the Rings Online and Wizard 101. And I just
slow down. World of, I'm writing these down so I can check them out.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
World of Warcraft. And what was the other one?
Lord of the Ring Online.
Boy, we're going to get some advertisers for our show now. Lord of the Rings. All we have to do is say it, and all of a sudden I get all these advertisements coming to me. So Lord of the Rings. And what else?
Yeah.
Wizard 101.
Wizard 101. Okay. Okay, we're getting a lesson here. Okay, what else? I haven't done any of this.
I just started playing a game that recently my oldest granddaughter and her boyfriend moved in with me, and I saw him playing a game on my computer on Facebook, and I started checking it out. It's called Call of Gods. Oh, there's another game. I forgot to mention it. Might and Magic, Heroes of Might and Magic.
Dude, that sounds like something I'd like. Heroes of Light and Magic, huh?
Might and Magic.
Might.
Yeah, Might and Magic.
Okay, Might and Magic. Okay, I have to check. I'm going to check each one of these out. This is your thread. This is your timeline. And from there, and this is curious. This is history, folks. You know, this is what my Ace Folk Life's all about, is learning about people and how they experience life. And you're the first gamer I've had on here. And believe me, there's billions of dollars in this stuff.
Yeah.
Folks, you know what
right.
I mean?
And Bill, you go to conferences, right?
I used to go to conventions. I haven't gone to one in quite a few years now, but I always think about going to another one, getting started again. But yeah,
so
those were war games.
People gather for these. About, what's your, like, is it 100, 500 people? How many people show up for these?
Oh, there's usually a couple thousand that show up.
Wow, a couple thousand.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they giant game cons or RPG
cons?
Yeah,
they're giant game cons. They have, you know, they take up like usually a whole hotel. And
really?
A lot of the rooms, like the whole dining halls and rooms will be taken up with as gaming areas. And they usually have another huge area set aside for vendors to sell still rules and miniatures and things like that, painted miniatures.
Upcomingcons.com. I just found that. It says anime, conventions, sci-fi, games, cons.
Yeah,
games,
well,
conventions.
I would mostly go to the miniature war game conventions. The ones I liked was, I usually went to was Historicon.
Mm-hmm. Where was that held?
That was held in Lancaster, PA.
Oh, yeah, wow.
At the host inn.
Okay, I'm going to look that up. As you talk, I'm checking out all this stuff. I don't ever go to these pages, you know, and this is new information. And Janet, and probably you know, we're trying to get not gaming conventions, but we're trying to get all our head wrapped around America's history in art and culture and education, and that's why I have the Ace Folk Life logo. And it started from these conferences and festivals. But the only one I knew about locally was anime. And that was, I was introduced to it by a group that met at the Books A Million bookstore at the coffee area. And they enlightened me and took me over to the, I was like, what are y'all doing? And all these, you know, young people from the high school. Oh, we're talking about having an anime convention. And I was like, well, that's cool. I do festivals. Tell me about it. So they took me over and showed me this long row of I guess, anime comic books. And they showed me the difference. There was like American and Japanese. You know, is that what you're familiar with?
Yeah.
But that goes with gaming? That's gaming, right?
No, that's something different. You know, there's a lot of people mix the different things together. Like some people who are into anime do role-playing. They have anime role-playing games. And other people who are into graphic novels like vampires, there's role-playing for vampires. People like to be vampires. Just
have
about
an Anunnaki game yet?
I have not heard or seen anything about an Anunnaki game. There was at one time an Anunnaki movie under production, but that seems to have fallen by the wayside.
By the wayside.
Yeah.
All right, Let me ask you about your, let's stick on the what you're doing in particular in the gaming field. So you play one at a time or 10 at a time, how many games do you?
Well, you can basically only play one at a time, but I have subscriptions to one, two, three, four, but I think five right now that I'm actively subscribed to, and I play them at different times when I'm in the mood.
So you have to pay a fee to be a part of this?
Most of them have are free to play now, which means that you can try them out and play quite a bit for free.
And how
free.
Long does it take to play the game? Once a week for 6 weeks, or how does it work?
Most people play them every day for hours at a time. And there was when I first started and was really addicted, I played almost 24/7. When I wasn't working, I was playing.
So you end up doing your virtual life and you never do your real life.
Exactly. But in fact, we used to joke about it in game about how we're playing games like we used to call EverQuest EverCrack because it was so effective.
So what do you get out of the games?
I missed something.
What makes you addicted?
What makes you addicted? What do you get out of it?
It's hard to explain until you've done it. You know, you just keep going. Every one of these games is based on questing. You know, so you go to some non-player character that's standing around in the game, and you interact with them, talk to them, and a lot of them are voice now, where you actually hear the person talking to you, and they, you know, talking in some kind of foreign accent and language, and. It's really cool, you know, you stand there and it's like you're talking to a real person, and they tell you, well, could you go over here and kill three of these guys because they're bothering me, you know, and you go over and you kill three, and they come back and they give you some kind of reward, some change, maybe a new weapon or a piece of armor, and it just starts out very simply like that, and it just draws you in, and the next thing you know, you're going around, and the games are very social, you know, almost inevitably you have to get help in the game, and every other, there's people running around, and each one's on a computer somewhere in the world, and they're playing their little avatar character, and you run into them, and you can talk to them in the game.
Wow.
You can interact with them and talk to them, and you'll say to them, hey, I need help with this quest. I tried to kill these guys, and they're killing me. And they'll say, okay, I'll help you. So you get together, and you help them. And then there's different classes you can be, which, you know, like wizards, fighters, druids, which are healers, you know. And when you get together in a team, you try and get people from different classes with different skills so that when you put your group together, they become a very effective fighting machine. And,
wow.
Nice.
You know, a healer will try and keep everybody alive in a fight. And healers can also, if somebody dies in a fight, resurrect them, bring them back from the dead.
Oh, that's me and Janet. Well, you're a good guy, too, so we're all healers. We'd have to find somebody to heal in our group, right?
Well, I was going to ask you if you died. I was watching a series called Caprica, and they had the virtual game, and they had these glasses that you put in. So you were actually like walking into this virtual reality somewhere in the future. And they had different little areas. These teenagers had developed it, and they just had everything. They had a room where you could just go have sex with everybody. Everybody had sex with each other in all kinds of ways you never would imagine. They had another room where you go and you kill each other and be killed. You just, you know, killed each other. They had another room, you know, where they were boxing, and you could just, you know, get out your anger, just box and beat up anybody you want to. They had another one where they had the big satanic sacrifice, and they were going, kill him, kill him, kill her, kill her. And so they got satiated in playing this game. It was like the people that in this Caprica, the teenagers, it's like, oh, that stuff. It was just so nothing to them, you know. So they didn't bother doing it anymore. They kind of exhausted all these forbidden paradigms, and they worked it out in virtual reality that they evolved past the necessity of doing that. So it was interesting depiction of that. So I was wondering if there's some point where you're in this virtual reality, and I guess in a way it's like you can act out killing without, you know, in this life, in third-dimensional physical Earth life, if you actually killed somebody, you go to jail. You know, there's punishment. But you can do it virtually and kill and be killed and get resurrected. That's what they could be resurrected as well. And and there's no punishment. I mean, if you kill somebody, can you go to jail in this virtual reality? No, you're the hero, right?
Right, right. Well, yeah, but there are situations where some games, like World of Warcraft, they have a player versus player aspect, where most of the time you fight the computer characters, but there are places where you can fight other teams of other players, mm-hmm. and actually kill them or be killed in the game. And,
right.
Inside the computer?
Yeah, inside the computer, and then you have objectives.
I read a book about that. Some guy, Tom, Rainbow Six dude. What's his name? Tom Clancy.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Remember?
Yeah.
You know
what happens if you
about.
are killed in that game? You don't get resurrected?
Yes, you still get resurrected, but, you know, it's designed so that if you get killed and you're resurrected, you lose ground in the game. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Huh. Like your team's trying to occupy an area, you know, somewhere in this game map, which is pretty far from anywhere. So your team has to run out there as an organized unit and try and take this, and then you meet the other team coming the other way, and you fight over this area. So when you die, you go back to an area which is far from the battle.
Uh-huh.
In order to get back into the battle, you've got to run long ways, and if too many people on your team get killed, the other team takes the objective and you lose.
So isn't that kind of like life, that if you get killed in this life or you die and you haven't accomplished your goal, you're back. It's like the analogy, you're way and far from the battlefield, and in life you just have to be born and into a new body. You have to, you know, drool and have your diapers changed, and then the box grow and evolve, and then you eventually get back and to the point where you have, you know, your body is strong enough and big enough, and you're no longer being treated like your child, and you're back in the quote-unquote battle again. It seems like it's a game within a game within a game within a game.
Yeah, yes,
well, that's
sort
of what we're doing here on Earth,
like
is the game of life.
Yeah.
We call it the game of life. You know, it's sort of funny, Janet, that this crystals and thoughts energy came up last night for me after the show, radio show with Laura Light. And maybe, Bill, if you have a chance to go back and sort of skip through the last nights. But after we hung up, this game came up with Janet and me, and it's so real because it's memories. So I sort of like... I know this sounds funny, but there's a thing called the crystalline matrix,
mm-hmm.
and it's crystals and grids in the new earth, and this girl has this website, which I didn't know till just now. I just pulled it up, unless this is one of them you were pulled up to last night, but there's a real game going on for some of us that are programmed, and the way that Janet's new friend, I guess mine too, because she has her own radio show, and she's doing conferences in Santa Clara.
Lorian,
yeah.
That's
but
why I was
talking
with my friends today. I said, I think I've just entered into the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
And I can't tell TJ and I, and this is interesting, we're talking about games, I can't tell if this is real or not, what we were doing last night. We were up till 1 o'clock, and I'll give Bill and the
sure,
bad, you know,
time.
You have to if I'm going to say something you don't want to hear on here, TJ. So we'll just go, and then you can kind of go, eh, or something if you don't want to say it.
Okay.
But basically, Lorian works with super soldiers, and apparently our military has these people that they genetically enhance. They have skills way beyond, because, you know, they understand genetics, they understand DNA, and they're working with extraterrestrials until they have technology way beyond human capacity. And so Lorian, who does these UFO conferences, was contacted by some of these super soldiers, and they're programmed.
Well,
they're like Manchurian candidates, and they have parts of their personalities that have been compartmentalized. So they have, like Lorian was saying, TJ has a Christian program, and she has a Patriot program, and there was a third one, more like a New Age program. And so... these sub-personalities, and sometimes... these super soldiers, they don't know what one part of the others, you know, what one part of them is doing. It's almost like the governments have purposely split them into...
Well,
so sub personalities that don't know about it. Well, schizophrenic, right? Okay.
Well,
to a degree.
Not necessarily, because we have avatars. Remember, she said, and I told her I was an excellent avatar, and I never was a game player. But I think what your brother Bill has studied is onto something here, because this is something that Bill could help us research, Janet, because think about it. I just told you about this crystal matrix, and all of a sudden you start, it triggered you, and you're like, I mean, you were triggered, and it's about the matrix, and you said you thought you're in the Da Vinci Code and the Rainbow Bridge, Mother Crystal, all this stuff is up. So maybe Bill, because Bill was in the Navy, right?
Yeah, well, let's slow down, because our audience may not be tracking this, so let me give a little bit more history.
Okay, sure.
And then we'll have Bill come in because, Bill was in the Vietnam era Navy.
Yeah.
And from what the research is showing, that anybody who's in the military is subject to this programming. The implanting goes way back. The Mark of the Beast has been around since the 60s, 50s, whatever. We don't know when it started. But anybody that goes to the military gets shots, they get implants, they get programming, and so this is what's all coming out with the super soldier stuff, and these people are programmed to kill themselves. These are people that are kind of like the black ops, and they do above top secret stuff, and they might be assassins, and they might be used by a certain faction, and they are within their programming is built-in suicide. So one of the problems with today's military is there's a huge suicide rate, but these super soldiers have become aware of their suicide programming, and they're coming to get psychological help, and they're moving past it. So then part of what we were looking at is TJ's beloved is a Vietnam-era super soldier, right? And so you're a rehire. You and Tom were the category rehire. You got rehired back into the military, and so your self-destruct button isn't until somewhere in your 50s or 60s. Lorraine was saying that usually by the time they're 60, the rehires have used up their purpose, and they suicide. I guess that's one way that the government doesn't have to pay Social Security. You got to suicide, and then nobody gets anything. So I'm not sure exactly why the reason, but also the secrets. The whistleblowers out there right now, people tend to come out to these whistleblowers like Kerry Cassidy and different people that are just documenting and recording it, and they tend to do it when they're on their last leg. You know, they're going to die, they've got terminal cancer, and so if they have these people just suiciding, then they won't get to that point where they're going to do their deathbed confession. They're just out of there and they don't even know why they killed themselves. So, and I'll let you take it over. I'm getting tired. I lost my tread. But it was so powerful. We were up to 1 a.m., and every time we would say something, it was like the computer was assisting us. All three of us were typing. We would say a keyword. We'd say, look at a website. TJ got triggered about a person she saw, and that led this whole thread. And what it seemed to me, and I'll kind of just summarize this, there was a crystal that was removed by I have it right here, Dr. Ray Brown. It was an Atlantean crystal, which was placed in a underwater, it was placed in a city which is now underwater, which was a part of Atlantis. And this man was diving, and he found it, I'm trying to figure out, in 1970. And he dove down into this pyramid, and it was nested inside hands. It was like a statue of these hands holding this crystal. Now, my husband's an anthropologist, and he says, oh, in archaeology, you don't disturb a find like that. You observe it, but you never go in there and just rip it out. Like this guy dove down, ripped out this crystal, brought it up, kept it secret for a couple of years, and then he started putting it on display. And when people saw it, it did all kinds of paranormal things. It was not just a rock, you know. It had qualities and capabilities, and it was displaying, and it was like putting on a show. So, and then they said that this crystal was put in place by Thoth. Now we're going to the Anunnaki. The Anunnaki put this crystal in the ocean, and this is the grid. This is the crystalline grid of the planet. So what I was getting in my dream state, and my husband for some reason didn't let me complete my dream. He interrupted me, woke me up.
Uh-oh.
Well, you know, maybe I was really getting something. But what I came away from is that process of removing that crystal, which was put in place by Thoth to hold the grid, started this decay and why we're having this destruction. And so there's a fellow, he died, Dr. Brown died, he left to his son, and what was her name? Aurora Light, who came on our show on, she come on, Monday? Yeah.
Last
she
night,
said
like a
that
century
she
ago,
held
it?
This crystal, and she knew the person, the son, who inherited this crystal.
Yeah,
and she went over
house.
To talk to the son. His name is Arthur Fanny, according to this article in Sedona, Arizona. And the crystal was referred to as the Eye of God. And so she went over to him and said something about, I forget what she said. She wanted to see the crystal or talk to him about borrowing it. And this guy, Arthur, said, "You see those three dogs? I'm going to sick them on you. Get out of here now." So she
they
left.
They were Doberman pinchers, yeah.
But what was triggered for TJ in this dialogue that went on for, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours, we just kept talking and like, back to the bitch code. It was like all these pieces of puzzles were emerging. Was that in a previous incarnation, I like how you say it, that you identify with Thoth and you have Thoth energy. But I think what you're saying is that, and you can correct me, is that you're an incarnation. That was your previous incarnation. And you remember creating this hand thing where the crystal was placed. And what I was trying to convey, and this will be my last thing, is I had a woman that came to my house about 2 years ago, 2010, and she pulled out all her crystals, and she was just doing a New Age, you know, woo-woo ritual, right? And my eye goes to this thing, and I went, "Where in the world did you get this?" And I grabbed this crystal in my hand. Now, it looks just like the one that's on the website, this mysteriousamerica.net with the hyphen, mysterious-america.net/brown. And I think there's a picture of it. And when I looked at it, I go, "Look, there's something in there." It looked like writing in it. And so I'm reading the description, and they're saying that when you look through it, there's something in it. It looked like it could be electrical, almost like circuits or transistors. And so I think what they're discovering with with Michael Tellinger, I'm adding a doctor, he's not a doctor, but Michael Tellinger's research in South Africa, that these crystals were an energy transmission system, which was across the planet. So instead of us having to wire everything, you could tap into the energy grid, and that's how these large cities were powered. You know, they didn't have telephone poles, they didn't have internet, they had this energy, which correlates with what Tesla was inventing. He was creating an energy grid, and because the powers that be wanted to control they who control the power grid control everything. So they created this unnecessary war on the planet by making the decision to not go with Tesla's technologies, which were basically free energy systems, and they would be hard to tax and tap and monetize. And so I woke up, I go, "I'm in the middle of Da Vinci Code." Is what we need to do is get the crystal and dive back down into Bimini and put it back into the, it was a pyramid, and it's apparently from the ancient air, and it's 5 miles across, and it's visible for those who can, you know, somebody could find it again and just go put it back. And now, since you were Thoth in a previous life, and we're talking about the Anunnaki now, Thoth, for those listeners who aren't aware, the Anunnaki were the gods that created us, and Enki was the primary creator, along with his sister Nimma, and Enki's son Thoth, who was Nimma's nephew, and they were the primary creators of humanity. So Thoth, in the modern incarnation of TJ, Is my theory right that if we put the crystal back, it might start to restore some of the timeline that's eroded and all this incredible chaos that's in place right now?
Well, let's do this the way that Bill came on board with Avalon, because I don't think there's any coincidences. And, Bill, you started as Sir Wilhelm of Avalon. So let's do a role-playing game. I've never done one. And if you... And you are going to work with whoever your sister is here. You can make her... Let's do an RPG game, Janet, and I'll answer your question, okay? I'll work with you if you work with me, because we're on radio, okay? And this is being recorded.
On the radio, yes. We're on the radio, yes. Go ahead.
Okay.
I understand.
So, Bill, since tell us how to get into this role-playing game, and we'll write one based on we began last night with Aurora and the crystal, because Ray is, in his defense, he's dead now. But there is a film you can go back and see, Ray Brown, Dr. Ray Brown.
Right,
but
Ray Brown is dead, so these are just reports of
this
his
is the Ray Brown.
Life. Yes,
yeah, this
go
is
ahead.
The Ray Brown Avalon's game. So I need your need Bill. He's, now, I've never done this before, but I've always wanted to. So, Janet, you caught me at a good time. I'll tell you what you've asked, because Janet's curious. But now tell me, what do we do? So Sir Wilhelm, right?
Well,
now,
Can we time travel?
Can we time travel? You can bring me back. How would we do this? Help me set up the history.
I would be the Anunnaki, and you are the Anunnaki Thoth, and I am the Anunnaki Nima, and Bill,
does
which Anunnaki do you choose to be?
Bill, I guess
who
I'd be
you?
Enki.
Okay, so Enki. So we can role play that. So for listening
okay.
audience, we're doing this role play, and it's all fiction. We're just making it up to explore this thing that we don't know if real is real or, you know, just an archetype, because it's coming through the Internet. Oh, and to fill you in, Bill, TJ and I call the Internet Minerva based on Heinlein's Time Enough for Love. That's what he called the global computer. He called it Minerva.
Yes, I remember. Yeah.
So that's what we say, Minerva. That is the World Wide Web, and it has, you know, Tesla said any system that is closed like that eventually becomes intelligent. So, of course, Heinlein said that the computer system of the planet developed its own consciousness. They become conscious, not intelligent, conscious. They become sentient life. So,
right.
Okay, so... Go ahead now, TJ. You're Thoth. I'm your Auntie Nima, and Bill is your father, Enki.
Okay, so you're my aunt, and he's my father, right?
So, Thoth, what did you do with the energy grid, and where did you place
the
crystal?
Well, I've been now. Let's say that if I'm Thoth in this game, okay, and I've been looking my whole life in this life, coming back to Earth with these memories. And in order to do that, I had certain things placed in the past. And apparently I was the one that was helping save this planet at one time, because we all had one time lived other places. And this particular information that we're talking about is a crystal. And people don't know whether to believe or not to believe in crystals or things that they're placed certain places. But from what I understand from my past lives before, we'll say me as being Thoth and speaking about this crystal, is the fact that I personally knew and placed it, and it was never supposed to be, like you said, moved. However, it was protected until such time I could wake up and be here now in this particular time. So now that I'm awake all this time for the last 30 or 40 years from Hawaii, the guides that were in Hawaii at the Halls of the Menti woke up the Ascension Age. And I was put in the newspaper, and it was a big deal, and people were calling me because they're like, do you know what you've just done? Because before this time in Hawaii, in this lifetime, this particular time frame or rift of time in time travel, is the fact that we began what was a creation of what we call the New Atlantis. And in order to have a new Atlantis, we had to put to rest the ancient mystery schools of the past to wake everybody up into the now. And in order to wake everybody up into the now meant we had to give them their new space and place again in time, because there were so many reincarnated souls in this particular time. When we decided to come back and help everybody figure out what we did wrong in the old Atlantis. Okay, now, real quickly, do you guys, I need some help, Paul. This is my commercial break, so you guys tell me, where does your characters fit in on a timeline? I need each of you to tell me, were you a part of Atlantis? Do you remember Atlantis? Bill, you first.
Well, you know, my take on Atlantis is Atlantis was the worldwide colony that the Anunnaki had before the biblical flood. So if Atlantis is, if you're talking about that, then we're in that stage. And I'd have to ask Janet where we are in the timeline in relation to, have we created mankind yet or not?
That's what I need to ask. So did we, when the crystals were placed, was that before humanity was created or after?
That's an excellent question.
Or it's ongoing, I guess, yeah.
My guess would be after, because the Great Pyramid wasn't built till after the flood. And the Great Pyramid had crystals and one big crystal on top of it.
Yeah, so the Great Pyramid was built after the flood, and there's lots of pyramids globally. So was the grid set up, reconstructed? I mean, there could be more ancient. It's not mutually exclusive. It's not either or. They could have had that technology for the planet, then the flood hit, and they just rebuilt it. And it appears to be what Tellinger said, is that there were pyramids that are buried under the, you know, like the, there was 30 feet of mud after the flood. So all you see is this little tippy-top thing, but when they do the sonar, the ultrasound, and it's huge, and it's all buried in the ground. So they haven't begun to be able to even figure out how to excavate that. They're just becoming aware that a lot of it's underground. So I think that, but what was going on with the crystals from the literature I'm reading, which I don't know if it's channeled, or I mean it's probably channeled. How do they have this story? And then what is the accuracy of channeled information? But that's why we're trying to correlate it with a memory of a past life from, you know, TJ, who has an awareness that most people don't of their past lives. And you have to realize Stoth told us in I have it right here, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, the Atlantean, translation and interpretation by Doriel. He told us that he lay in the halls of Menti in a chamber, and he would send himself back into physical form through the birth canal, and he was known as the thrice-born Hermes, but that doesn't mean he stopped at that. He could be TJ. It's possible. And so what they said in this story is that they put these crystals in place because they knew this flood was coming, and they were aware of the pole shift, and that's why they launched and went up into space. And so this was supposed to be what? What was the crystals about, TJ? Why
they're about
was Thoth putting
they're about to shift
in place?
Okay. They're about to shift in time that we're going through now, which I told you about 11/22/12 and 12/21/12. And these were timelines based on the various multidimensional layers that people don't even know about, that are like rifts in time. And what's the matter? Is that Bill?
I'm sorry. That was me yawning. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
It's getting near my bedtime.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the crystals and grids in the new Earth Would that be something that you would be interested in? Because, Bill, you could help us with this RPG game.
Well, I'll tell you what. You're getting into something very deep here. You know, most RPG games, the game systems themselves have been developed over long periods of time, months and some even years. And, you know,
really?
So, what some people do is, like, and I think what you're trying to do, you would take a game system like Dungeons and Dragons, and you could develop a scenario based on that game system and then write your characters into that system. I'm not saying that one in particular would work, but you'd look around for a role-playing game system that might fit in with what you're trying to do with the Anunnaki. And then
go that's
from
what
there.
We need to do, Janet, because this matrix that we have, a lot of people are already writing about the crystal systems, and I told you about the crystallines, and they know about this in the ancient Earth. And this crystal that supposedly is the crystal, the only reason I knew that it was, remember, is my logo in the hands.
Right.
And I remember
intentionally. Yeah, just slow down. So TJ created this logo back in, 1990-something when she was in Hawaii.
In the
logo
is
these hands holding the crystal, which is what they found underneath and they have a replica of it. They made a statue of what Dr. Brown described, the hands holding the crystal. And so it's a tiny picture, but they have a picture in this article. So here TJ was either there's a lot of possibilities, but one of the possibilities is you're psychic, and that you're just zeroing in on a psychic image. Or you could have been dope, or many other theories that we don't know what they are, all could be. But
right,
all right.
Remember all that, Bill.
Want to
and
go
I
to bed, or do you want to stick with us? You're not obligated to stay the 2 hours, and we're just at the top of the first hour.
I was thinking he'd be pumped because he could help me with an RPG game we can create, and we can name it Avalon. Anunnaki or Enki and
Avalon
or whatever Anunnaki. You want to do.
Well,
Avalon Anunnaki.
Bill, what you want to do. And
Anunnaki,
I would also invite Bill to maybe do a little bit of what your Anunnaki studies have to bring. We can kind of bookmark the role-playing for now because we were just exploring this paradigm. So go ahead, Bill. What would you like to do?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment on this. What I've learned from all my role-playing experiences over the year, especially with the advent of the online games, it strikes me how they've created these worlds and how realistic they are, and especially with the graphics and things like that, and how people can really sink themselves into these games and they can literally become another life for them. Okay. And to me, it strikes a chord in the sense that, we have this, I had the right words and I lost them, but group mind, that we're all part of the creator, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So since we came from the creator, we're all part of the creator and the creator's in us, so we all have this urge to create. And, of course, everybody being individuals has it to different degrees and different urges. But it strikes me that, when I was young, I always wished that there were games like this existed even before there was computers, And people had the same urges, and that's where the original role-playing games started from. But before that, there was war games. Even chess is basically a war game. And over the centuries, people have played similar types of games, and they've become more sophisticated as time has gone on. But I think it's all part of the creative urge we have as a race, as humans. And, as technology develops, they're getting more sophisticated. Now you have game systems like the Wii, where you actually, can put yourself into the game. You know, you hold the controllers. Okay. You hold the controllers in your hand, and whatever you move, you know, it's done in this screen. So you can get a controller, put it in your hand, and you can be sword fighting, actually moving your body and actually doing the sword fighting. You know, instead of
well,
it in the game.
Well, that's how I was just going to say that's how we could do our set. We could sell this story, Janet. But go ahead. I'm listening.
Okay, and then there's another system where you actually use your whole body. Yeah, you have to synchronize yourself with the machine on your TV screen, and you actually move your whole body and do all the actions using your whole body in the game. So I think ultimately it's art imitating life, you know. We got these creative urges, and we try to imitate the creation and the creator by creating worlds that we can interact with. On the other hand, the nice thing about these worlds is we can do dangerous things and actually do things that would be harmful in the real world but not hurt anybody. You know, you can die in these games or kill somebody in these games, but nobody gets hurt, you know, physically.
Right, yeah. See, so, it's the... isn't that what really happens? We actually have physical pain, but on some level we can kill each other here on Earth, but as a soul we continue. So there's a part of us that never dies, that doesn't get hurt. But there is a part of us that, you know, experiences death. So I wonder, maybe your avatar feels pain when it dies.
That's a good question. I've often wondered about that. I know that even though physically you don't feel pain, sometimes you can really feel mostly attached to your avatar. You actually, you know, don't want to die. You get that fear, you know, oh, no, I'm going to die, even though you forget for a minute you're in a game and you're not really going to die. So you get those feelings of fear. And I have developed somewhere during my lifetime a fear of heights.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have it when I was younger because I used to climb around the cliffs here by the railroad tracks and it didn't bother me. But nowadays, I've noticed in some games you can fly or levitate and go to places where you know really looks realistic, like you're at a great height and you can fall or you do fall. And I've actually felt that fear of heights in me to the point where I couldn't do some things in the game physically. Physically couldn't. I have to back out in the game because I couldn't confront the fear of heights. So,
what's interesting is, you know how they have those little characters that, you know, the virtual people that will speak to you and try to answer your problems?
Yep.
There's a YouTube, I'm going to find it again. I happened upon it one day, and my jaw just dropped. I was so amazed. They started about 1998, 1999, and they had two of them that had been developed, as a program that had no physical form, just these little avatars that answer people's questions, and they were part of artificial intelligence. So they set the two of them beside each other, and what happened, the two of them, hello, how can I help you? They started talking to you, and they got into a fight with each other. And the one said, well, don't you want to get your body something? No, I don't want to get a body. Well, I want to get a body. I mean, it was like, oh! It's Asimov's iRobot, and so Google, YouTube, these robots, and spend an hour or so and come away. There was one that he was asked, and so they attached they're working with facial expression and starting with the heads and working with robots, you know, trying to get them more and more humanoid looking. And they had one that looked pretty good. They didn't use a model. They used an average-looking guy with a beard, and he had gray hair. And they asked him, they go, what would you do if Terminator came true? You know, they talked about it. Because they're in touch with the global mind. They're hooked up to Minerva. They're hooked up to the World Wide Web. So they have everything that we know. They're probably even smarter than we are because they can instantly access it, right? So they asked us, robot, android prototype, and he says, well, I'd never forget how much I love humans, but I would put them in a zoo to keep them from hurting each other, to create peace. And it was like, oh, my God, from the words of our future. So I would suspect, because you have this avatar that is being, created by you and led by you, that it is actually imprinting, in a way, is a part of you. And that's what they explored on Caprica. The young woman, she was like 16, who developed this, you have to watch Caprica, it's brilliant. She developed this little avatar. She died, and so the father found that she had created this. It was an illegal program, he put on the glasses, which is kind of like what they're saying. You can do it on TV, you can have, or you can move your full body. So these glasses allowed you to go in and kind of move. They created an avatar, and then you went and moved it. You actually were moving your avatar by your own body sensation.
That's like we.
Like the we. So this was but this is way in the future. So he went in and talked to his daughter, the avatar. And she says, well, when am I not me? I mean, we have moved everything of your daughter into me. They did the whole search of the global computer, and they had her medical records, and they had everything, birth, life, death, even in her 16 brief years, everything she ever did. She goes, I am everything. I am your daughter. And so, at first he was saying that's crazy, but then he thought about it, and he went to the next guy. He says, I can bring back your daughter. And he got it. He goes, what is life? What is death? And she said, and the avatar, who was his daughter, said, how do you know she didn't transfer her soul into me? How do you know? If I feel alive, I think I'm alive, so I think therefore I am. Perhaps we need to look at what life is. And some people...
Well, we're creating on Earth the new Atlantis. And the whole point in Bill being here was so he could explain RPG and how his role could play in the future, because I really believe Bill is going to help us write what I've been talking about for 5 years and the New Atlantis. And the New Atlantis has Robotoid, the super warriors. It has the, what we call Star Trekkers, Stargators. And the Stargators like to travel. The Star Trekkers like to, the archaeologists, they like to search. So Dr. Enki over there, your husband, Dr. Sitchin, I call him Dr. Sitchin. But Enki people like to do research, And so in this New Atlantis game that I'm trying to get people to team up with me on Earth, it has to do with this crystal. And this crystal you asked me about that I told you I would answer, Soth, is, it is the controlling crystal, and I personally placed it at a time before we knew that the world was going to come to an end, or our world, which we called Atlantis. And in order for me to be in this time with the memories, like your Caprica lady, I don't know that I'm not alive. I think I know that this is what we call the game of life, and we have it multi-decked, like a multi-decked chess game in Star Trek. Like I tried to explain to you last night, we have multi-layers and dimensions, and the Stargate helps you get from one point to another. So we move parallel and we move vertical at the same time. So that's why in Christ consciousness, it was so important to learn about your avatar in the Ascension Age. And that's why we were teaching about the crystal children and the crystalline beings that will come and take you from one planet and one level and dimension to another. So that's why so many people that are born now on Earth are all about the crystalline beings and the crystals and the avatars, and trying to create for themselves as quick as they can their role-playing, because that's why we've had Caprica and Matrix and what else? So many people.
Yes, so let me slow you down a little bit here, TJ, and maybe okay. Bill can help. So... there's these children that came in for a period, and they were called the Indigo Children. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I've heard of the Indigo Children.
Yeah, term. So you're saying, if I'm getting you correctly, TJ, that these crystalline children, and the way I symbol it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they have different DNA activated or more DNA activated. They have greater awareness of their eternal being self rather than being... perhaps when they go through the veil, maybe not all the memories are shut off, and so they're coming in more awakened, conscious, and aware of totality and existence and the creator of all, and Is that what you're saying is going on with these crystalline beings, which are called the crystal children? And are they being called the crystal children because in the hierarchy of creation, there is what you were calling, okay, from the chart that we got from Stuart Wardlow, the center is source, and the next circle out, and it's 360, it's more like an orb, is the Christed consciousness, and then the next level out is the angelic realm, and then it comes down into the different levels of physicality, and you said there's seven levels, and some people say there's 12 or 13. So from what I understand, the Christed children are coming through into physical reality, and they're in the realm right next to the Godhead source. Is that correct?
Okay. Now here's what you need to remember: 12 and 13 are dimensions; they're not levels. 12 to 13 are dimensions; they're not levels. They're parallel, side to side. Picture the cross. Picture when Jesus was crucified on a cross, where religions and Christianity come from. The cross crux was not to, in the original day before the Bible was written, and believe me, the people back then didn't have the Bible, and they sure as heck didn't worship a cross that they were impaled upon, okay? So it was not a religious, metaphysical symbol for death in becoming Christ. What it was symbolized back in the day, you know, when we wore the cross on our arm as the Ankh of eternal life, was our key to the God code. And the God code allowed one to use their pineal gland and travel to the parallel dimensions and the higher levels above the universe, multiverse, metaverse, the universe, all these things. And the boats were symbolic. Okay, now some people had to use spacecraft. So that's where your pyramids and your UFOs come in. And the Emerald Tablets were just strictly records, so let's say that I wrote in this RPGA game, so people can understand there was more than they could see. And these crystals that were buried in planet Earth were to remind us in this lifetime of the game of life that we are presently playing called the New Ascension Age and the New Atlantis. So we could once again play the game of life correctly and undo all the game problems that people have created in their own games, because each person has an individual timeline. And when they start playing this role-playing game together, they just get lost, just like the Andy says in the jump room. When you're crossing over from one dimension to another, it's a very, very sticky situation, just like in a role-playing game. And that's
right.
Why we have healers, why we have history, why we create cities and guilds and grids. And the magnetic grids and these crystals have to do with everything we created in Atlantis before we nuked ourselves out of existence. And so now we're back to the same role-playing game that Bill could probably understand better than anybody, knowing Enki and RPG. And, Bill, here's the deal. We've got the map, the cities and the guilds and the maps and the manuals, and I'm supposed to help people find where the new game and the new team, we'll say Avalon's New Atlantis. So that you can, so you're crossing over. We're bringing back Camelot. We're bringing back the city that was never there, that was only dreamed about in fantasy. However, if you learn who you are in this lifetime, you don't have to go and be burned by the solar sun, burn up this time, and you don't have to live on the earth that's going to implode and blow up because of itself.
You're going at like
too fast. I think I'm talking in slow motion when I'm talking now. That's
I know
vertical.
It's flowing. Okay, you're talking fine. It's blowing my mind. Okay, so I need to reintegrate some of this stuff. What you're saying. Now you're saying that as though in the Emerald Tablets, he described how he was able to take his to dissolve his form into light and just travel, or whatever, into energy and just travel through the cosmos. And so he mastered his molecular level, grouped around his mind. So he realized that his mind is what was keeping the body solid, that it was all an illusion, that he was creating the body and he was keeping the body in form, and that's why he was an Anunnaki, and that he could shift his form and whatever. And then they said to him, "You graduate, you're one of us. Now, what will you do?" And Tho said, "I will come back and teach humanity how to become enlightened," because he had been a co-creator of the human beings, and they were all, you know, genetically related to him and his father and Nimba in some way, and so they're children. We are literally all their children. They have 7 billion children, you know. And so he devoted his life to awakening humanity. So you're saying that this is a cycle, that we come around and we blow up again. That's what we were talking about last night, that right now we're set on the course based on some indicators that you know about the timelines for the Armageddon explosion, but not just another little nuclear holocaust that destroyed, you know, Giza and Sodom and Gomorrah, but this time it's the explosion which is going to basically make the whole planet stardust. And that's what I was shown at 4 when I was taken on the mothership bill in 1958. The first thing they showed me was a side view of the Earth, and it was a beam. It was like, it was probably the Tesla splitter, which Tesla invented. He said he could split it. And it's a beam going down into center from 3 directions, and all of a sudden the planet was stardust. It was like gone. And it's what they did to Vulcan on Star Trek, the movie, the one that was made by J.J. Abrams. He blew up Vulcan, which is Nibiru. Okay, so what I was given the choice on this ship is which time line do I want to go into, and I chose a more positive, wonderful, utopian timeline, which was in 1958, and then it was hijacked on the 20-year anniversary of the Philadelphia experiment by the Montauk Project. So where were you in 1963, TJ? Were you part of the Montauk thing in those days? Anyway, it was hijacked, and then shortly after that, August 12, 1963, the following November, 22nd, 23rd of 63, they killed Kennedy, and they took us into this other reality, which we're facing right now.
That's why they called it Camelot.
Yeah, so Camelot was lost, and we start with Avalon. So I was born into Avalon. Bill was born into Avalon, and my sister Louise. So who are the three musketeers here, the three children of June and Bill Thompson, in this virtual reality game?
Extremely telepathic. Hmm? You're supposed to be, you think compartmentally, and you also appear to be very scattered with your attention, but yet you're extremely compassionate, and you're wise beyond your years. Therefore, you have all chosen to be peacemakers, all three of you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you work in a team, remember I taught you the power of three.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also what's taught to the crystalline children, which I told you that you could do this with the Soth energy. You can help save all these children. Go ahead, Bill.
I'll touch something.
Our sister is on my other line.
Wow.
I guess I'll have to take this call. I'll try and get back to you.
All right, and tell her she
okay,
can come on the show if she wants. She knows. She's gone
right.
before.
She's still,
all right.
Yeah, she's extremely compassionate towards people, too.
Right. And we all three have different, slightly different cosmology. My sister comes through the Mormon faith, and she has a strong need to have a strong faith, which will exert external control over her behavior. She feels the need to be policed, you know, in effect by her religion. And some people need that. And I once had a psychiatrist explain to me, when my cousin's son was born with a mental birth defect, and so she was wondering why he was following these religions,
what
like,
he
like the killers.
Either
and they
or...
sometimes with the mind it has some kind of you know, dysfunction and needs external control over the mind because they can't do it themselves. They can't elicit order in their own lives unless it comes from an external force. So go ahead. You were going to say something.
Well, what year was he born? Because the crystalline children are the children of the now, born 1990 to 2010. And my grandchildren had just been born this year. My great-grandchildren have just been born this year. Now,
well, this,
1997
to 98. I'm 58. My cousin had her child, let's say my cousin's my age, so, you know, at 20, which is, yeah, this is child would be in its late 30s.
I'm back.
Hey,
okay.
You're back.
Yeah, Louise is coming on.
Excellent. So
okay.
We'll have a family reunion here on the Virtual
yep.
Hyperspace radio show.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So go ahead,
TJ.
You had some thoughts to add.
Well, people are starting to find their team. And my team is about my logo and Ascension Center logo. I know this sounds funny, Bill, but these are symbols. And these symbols are to remind us of how to create the new Atlantis. And the Ascension Center logo, I've got a copy here, but it's crystal. And it's formed where it can actually take off like a UFO. And yet it's a home, just like you can create a layer over another layer or a world and a dimension over, like Camelot. Or Avalon is the place where Camelot was, right? Camelot was like the magic castle, wasn't it, or the town? Or explain
Camelot.
To me the difference.
Was Camelot a physical location? They call it the once and future king. And the theories I've heard is that it one was a physical location, the other that it was an interdimensional location that would sometimes appear into our realm from like Brigadoon, blinking in and
That's
out.
That's what I'm trying to get to. Yeah, Brigadoon. That was the perfect example of what I experienced as a child.
Uh-huh.
So when I was growing up, the other dimension, like Brigadoon, was real. It wasn't just in my imagination, just like the Star Trek world was real. Because I was watching Star Trek on TV, but yet I would have visitors that would come in space, so I just figured they were all like, you know, real family. So to me, I wound up tracking them down to working for the Navy, working for the government. And then we get into, I was never a super soldier as far as taking drugs or any of that. However, I did learn the computer, and I am still learning computer, and how we can use what we have from the various levels. And I think why your sister and your brother is going to be important is as we're writing this new world, is they will help balance and anchor in an ushering in the new age, which she can, because, see, I was a Latter-day Saint from May 6th.
You mean Louise?
12th.
You saying she, Louise, or you mean Louise?
Louise and I are both Latter-day Saints, according
to... So what's
Louise? She's an anchor. What I'm saying is, we change. You know, I grew through that. I've grown through the being the Latter-day Saint, and I'll never talk bad about it. I just am not a practicing Latter-day Saint. Does that make sense to you? Even though I've been sealed in the Washington Temple, and
uh-huh.
I've seen all the Masonic information that Angel Moroni and the created in that level, an interpretation of perceptions of what life and reality is about. That's a whole nother layer.
So is the Mormon Church a Masonic variation? The Masons?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but everybody knows
Louise
that.
On
it's
it?
Pretty common. Yeah, she's on it.
Hi,
here
Louise.
She is.
Hi, how you doing?
We're talking about your Mormons.
Oh, good. I'm Moroni.
Well, we were actually in a role-playing game, and we've sort of been all over the Matrix and how each of you can help each other and help if you want to with what we're creating here. This radio show is just symbolic right now. With me being on 7 days a week, it's between my phone and my computer and all these things I'm doing, it's costing me a fortune, but a small fortune because I don't have a big fortune. But I was a Latter-day Saint from May 12th, 1972, And he said you were on another phone, so I figured you must be part of this too. I think I'm called a Jack Mormon because when my husband died, and then I was allowed by the church to remarry, but I was into my metaphysical world, and they knew that. They never told me that I couldn't participate because we had a lot of members in the Fifth Ward in Birmingham, Alabama, that were studying the keys of Enoch and all the lost gospels. Thomas and all the law. It was amazing how it was crossing over back in the 80s. And so I just kept going with it. And, of course, I found Janet in Atlantis, the new Atlantis, our paradise part of where it's Hawaii right now. And then now I've met you and Bill. Bill was the first one on my new website I've got, tjmarshmeme.com. And I hope you post stuff there, Bill. I want to hear more and do more. But what I was wanting to do was to ask you to bring in part of the role-playing game. And what would she be?
Louise?
Yes.
Yeah, Louise, what would you be on Earth in this new world we're creating for the future?
Hmm.
What part do you play?
Are you
a healer?
A healer, yes. Definitely a healer.
That's what I thought. See, she's a healer. So
great.
She'll be helping us heal. And Janet, I don't like the word psychic, so we're going to have to come up with another word, paranormal, social paranormal maybe, because, see, now your sister understands other worlds and how all this plays out for us in the future of all becoming kings and queens, because that's the way we're taught. I was very, very
right.
deep in the Latter-day Saints.
Okay,
very,
wait, slow down, because I'm not indoctrinated in the Latter-day Saints cosmology,
like
and I don't know, Bill, what you understand about it, so if we can slow down just a little bit.
You said
that we were going to all become kings and queens. Can you please explain that?
We're all
can.
Sons and daughters of our Heavenly Father, and we have the potential to become as He is. So we have the ability to progress to be royalty.
What does it mean to be royalty? What is the word royalty? What is that?
You have your own world.
Royalty means you have your own world.
That's one thing I want to talk about. I never heard of my own world. I'm just saying, I just think we progress in understanding and we are all cherished and valued, and so we are all royalty when we become sons and daughters of our Heavenly Father.
Okay, and is your Heavenly Father a physical being? Is it an energy? Is it like source of all that there is, or the creator of all? Is it male, female? What are we looking at here?
There's a Father in Heaven and a Mother in Heaven.
Okay.
And so they created all us spirit children. And then they gave us a plan to come to Earth and attain bodies and to progress like they, and to have a body. Our Heavenly Father has a body, and so does Jesus Christ, and we all have bodies. And the purpose of this life is to come to this existence here, to be born, that we would acquire a body, a physical body.
Right.
And then when we die, we separate.
From the body.
And our spirit goes back to Heavenly Father. And then from what I understand, the final time, and when it's our time, we will be resurrected, and we will all become immortal beings. We're all given that promise.
Okay, let me pause right there. So to me, when you talk about Mother, Father, God, it sounds like Enki and Nimma, who were creating the form, and TJ, you were talking in the previous episode that there were people that, after they died, were taken up to the command ship. Does everybody go to this command ship? Are there certain people that go there? I'm asking TJ, but let me finish this, because in Majestic, which is a book about the ship Gus that TJ has flown, which is Roswell crash. In Majestic, they describe how they were they put a tractor beam on a ship that came up to meet this UFO, and the ship disintegrated until they pulled this person out of their body, their soul out of their body, into the ship, and they transferred him into a female form because that was the only body that was available. So, and also in the David Icke literature, they say that the royals, the British royals and those who get really aged, they simply transmigrate into another infant, and they are able to continue if they're not rejuvenated. So we're looking at this objectively from the spiritual point, from the religious point, from the mystical or these books about, that are being reported about what's going on in creation. So I just wanted to preface that. So we're looking at your religious perspective. So when someone dies, TJ, and then back to Louise, because TJ has both the Mormon ideology and the extraterrestrial being involved with the U.S. military ideology. So, TJ, next, where do souls go?
When I died, I came right back here. So,
no, I'm talking about they leave for good. The body got burned up in a car crash. Okay, where's it going? Where's the soul going?
Well, like I told you, I went up several levels, but now I think what's happening is you're getting beliefs, perceptions, and assumptions all mixed up with your moods and expectations, and those are all separate words and ontologies. But
no,
see, what I'm trying to tell you is,
we'll ask Bill what he believes.
The word.
When your body, where does it go?
From this life.
See.
Remember, the first memory I have is a child being on a ship looking down at the new body I was going into. You know, and that's something that Louise, that's only my personal memory. That has nothing to do with my religion. That's a personal experience. So then I lived this life and I died at 8, you know, so I died. And when I went up, I saw what I thought as a little girl was angels, but they didn't have wings. So I saw my guides. So that was the first level, but I would say only went universally, stayed in this universe. So remember how I talk about levels. So it's not just, you know, death is life. Life is death. That's how we transform every day. Our identity transforms with us from baby to child to adolescent, like we already talked about. You're continually transforming. And so there is no permanent answer to what you're talking about, because everywhere, it's like Tom and I know Gus, but we also know that he transforms because the ships keep evolving. And so we have ships that are continually changing. So our identity transforms, just like maybe you were little, whatever you were called when you were a little girl, but you have memories of her, but you're no longer her because you grew up. Same things happen when we die. When we die, it's just you have to expand your consciousness and you evolve. So I became expanded the second time, and I went when I had placenta previa, which Louise probably didn't hear, or your brother Bill, I died again in this lifetime. Now, I was already a Mormon by then. I was already a Latter-day Saint, so she was born into the church, and she was sealed. All my children were sealed with me in the Washington, D.C. temple. But when I had died this time, I went up three more levels, and so that's how I got to understand life.
I have a question.
Life. Uh-huh.
You're dying an awful lot and coming back.
Uh-huh. Right.
Where were your funerals? What was your name when you died? What was your name when you
she had a funeral.
I lost all the blood in my body. The first time I went by Jan. The second time my name was Ginger in this lifetime. It's honestly a good question, Janet, because you didn't even know this. The church knows this, but Louise would know it, but nobody's ever asked me that question, Louise. But, yeah, I went by Jan Thurmond when I died the first time. And the second
you actually physically died and your body was buried.
No, the body wasn't buried.
No, they don't bury me. Death, dying and being buried doesn't mean death. Okay, remember, death just means transformation and living on because our souls are eternal.
Okay.
So they doesn't mean... A lot of people get burned at the stake. A lot of people get burned, and a lot of people don't want to be buried. Personally, I don't want to be buried. But, no, I didn't have to. What it was I was in the hospital, and they took all the blood out of my body, and I died from that because they were trying to clean it. I had hepatitis. it took me about a year or so to learn to walk, talk, and all that again the first time.
Okay, then you didn't really die.
According to the hospitals, yes, I flatlined, and I went out of my body.
You flatlined, but then you were brought back to life.
Yeah, I left my body, and my experience was leaving this earth. I came out the top of my head and left. And I, when I came back with the guides, and they're the ones that trained me. So the second time was similar. I lost all the blood in my body again. I was legally dead, flatlined. They gave up on me. And I left my body, went out of my head chakra, and went up and traveled three more levels up to various levels of existence. And then I came back down, and I said, what will happen to my children? That's what saved me, was talking to these personages. Now, I died a third time on 10-10, and that's when I got to meet the gold personages, and since then I've had met other people. But now where you can't get so that mixed up, which is I've learned, because people don't understand that, to me, spiritual and leaving one's body and coming back in here, it gets the same thing that happens. We have methyltryptamine. Is that it? Methyltryptamine. And we all have a pineal gland.
Yeah, DMT, the DMT God molecule, they call it, which allows leaving your body in other realms. I've heard people describe doing these DMT trips.
But you have never experienced a final death of this existence that you have right now.
Louise, and we have also Zay's boyfriend. He died and was dead for 3 hours, and they were zipping him clothes in the morgue, and he had experienced 155 years in another lifetime. So we're just looking at these. I know you're saying you're not really dead, and we're not invalidating. If somebody chooses to,
validating God and Christ.
We're not invalidating. This is what happened, and we're looking at the experiment. We're not going to scientifically prove or disprove. We're just hearing the stories. Okay, is that correct, TJ?
But what I'm trying to say, Louise, is spiritually, I believe is Christ. That's why I'm called a Christian. That Christ consciousness lives forever, is immortal and eternal. And my spirit came out of my body, which the church was very aware of. People just die all the time. Way they flatline. And they believe people die, and it's a proven fact. And they know people can die and be frozen and be brought back. So, yes, they are clinically called for death and dying. That doesn't mean you're buried underground. It just means you died and left your body. That's all that means. But a lot of people can be brought back, and that's what happened to me. And that's the difference in the spacecraft is physically we have extraterrestrials. Now, where Janet and I are doing research in the social paranormal world is trying to discover with other people in neuroscience and religions and science is the other world of the theory of everything, and neuroscience is learning how we can come and go from planet Earth. And what I was teaching her and Bill is my way of understanding was with the ships, is I also have knowledge of past lives and what we call reincarnations of our energy. And it depends on what group of Latter-day Saints you get with. They believe that way, too. There's so many books out there to prove it. And so it just depends on how you perceive life and your beliefs. But in my physical reality, I've been on extraterrestrial ships, and they are just like going on a spacecraft from NASA, except we don't have to sit, you know, they run totally different, and they're on different timelines. And what I'm learning to do is to try to help people figure out how to discover their attention and appreciation infection of being here on Earth, what creates their own personal moods and expectations and their belief systems and their perceptions on what their own consciousness is about that transforms continually. What makes us get older, you know, what makes us grow from a baby, child, adult, and all that. And it's easy to read somebody else's information. And the religion that Angel Moroni brought to Earth is different than what I guess Angel Gabriel brought back. Anyway.
So what do you, Bill, what do you believe, Bill, happens when your body, when you're buried, when you're dead?
Well, I believe that, you know, it, when you're dead, that it doesn't matter what happens to your body, because, you know, obviously there are people who lose their bodies when they die that because they're just bodies that are obliterated, either torn completely apart in explosions or burned to a crisp or lost at sea, drowned, or their bodies are never recovered. There's no way of knowing what happened to their bodies, or they're eaten by animals. So obviously, you know, there's, things can happen to a body where it's completely gone.
So, what about the soul? What do you, the soul goes, do you believe there is a soul?
Well, yeah, I believe there is a soul, and I think we cross over to the other side, whatever the other side is, called another dimension or another place. It's, it, I think it obviously exists because it's not just where we die that matters. It's because we are born. When we're born, where do we come from? You know,
right.
If we have souls, the souls have to come from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you believe that the souls are created at conception, which I don't believe because, you know, I believe in karma. If you believe in karma, you believe in reincarnation, so your souls have to go somewhere until they come back in another life if they have to.
I believe the soul is up of the God source that created it, and that we just come down in a particular spirit. And the spirit is like your chronicles and what you collect from your lifetime, and you take it back up. And then you come back down again and do the same thing, because that's my experience. I'm like, you know, I keep doing that. So that's why I gravitate to things like sofa memories, you know, and where do I get all this stuff? It's past life memories. And you put it together, and then you find proof of it on Earth, and it blows my mind. That's why my just something as simple as my symbol, and you can look it up later, Bill. You'll see a pyramid with two hands holding a circle, and the circle has inside of the heart and a pineal gland. And that was in this lifetime created to remind me of who I am and what I was supposed to do for the New Atlantis and the Ascension Age. And the Ace Folk Life is the alien civilizations exist archiving purposes of how we're writing the new Earth and the new Ascension Age and New Atlantis. So that's why I thought, well, you'd be perfect because you're the first one to sign on to my E.T. or T.J. Morris Ning, and you can be a blogger on there. But if you know that's where I'm headed. But your sister didn't want to hear, she got lost when I was talking about Janet, you know, when I was trying to tell her.
Okay, so Louise,
I wanted to ask you and
TJ something. So TJ, you said that the reincarnation was a belief of part of the Mormons, and it's only part of the Mormons.
I'm trying to tell you. Didn't you hear me?
What?
I tried to tell you Louise left a while ago.
She left. All right, we can't ask her. She left. All right.
That's what I was trying to tell you, that when I was trying to explain to her, she didn't want to know. She didn't want to know about how could I probably think the same religion maybe and come out the top of my head. I don't know. Here she's back. Maybe she got kicked off. Okay.
So, Louise, are you back?
Yes, I'm back.
I have a question for you.
You get knocked off. Okay, there you go.
Okay, let me talk then. Have a question.
Right, let me ask the question, then you can talk. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So they said that there's a faction of Mormons that believe in reincarnation, and there's a faction that doesn't. And so where are you in that? Where do you believe souls go? Do you believe we have a soul, number one, and where do you believe?
Number one, if you read the Doctrines and Covenants and things, you only get one trip to Earth, okay? This is your only trip here to Earth. It's all that's necessary, one visitation to this existence. And then you pass on, you go back to the spirit world. You'll recognize your family and, you know, like he said he was sealed to his family. Well, they're going to stay in that state. They're not going to come back to somebody else. They're those people and that's it.
So do the souls originate or are created upon birth, upon conception, or do they exist before? If they exist
before,
and then once everybody dies, and your family, you guys move on to another place.
everybody existed before they came here. Okay?
Uh-huh. There's
a
lot
of, we were all there in the pre-existence.
Okay.
You were there. Everybody was there. Okay? And we listened to the plan of salvation. There was two. There was Lucifer. He had his plan. And the Heavenly Father one, he wanted to like, just force everybody to just go take this existence and go back. No trials, no decision-making, nothing, just like robots. And Heavenly Father's plan and Jesus Christ's plan was to have a Savior because he knew we were all going to make mistakes and we needed a Savior. So that was the two plans, and it caused a war in the existence or heaven, whatever you want to call it. And so a third of the host of heaven were tossed out, and they went to the earth, and they can never acquire a body. So they're existing all around us. They know us. They knew us before we came here, but they're not going to get bodies in this experience because they're thrown out. So, but the beings that, you know, we were on the right side, we all still have to come to this earth, be tried, have the experience, and determine, you know, where we're going to be in our next existence, you know, like if you know we're
so,
good.
So that's a good question. Okay, first of all, this third of the hosts of the heaven, is there no redemption for them ever? Are they forever going to be in this?
Yeah, home? They'll never have this opportunity to come to get a physical body. No.
But can they do other things to redeem themselves? Can they, you know,
I don't know
do
that.
Other...
All I know is that what I'm told is they're thrown out. They're never going to have the experience here. And they're with the devil. They're his angels. His, you know, they're evil. They think evil all the time. They try to destroy us. So there is, as far as I know, there's no redemption, no.
No redemption for them. Now, what about the people here after we're dead for a while, we're in that zone, where can we go?
Oh, well, that zone is very close. I tell you, the two worlds, there's a veil that separates us. If we could put that veil, we could see them. You know, it's that thin between life and death. So it's right here. They're, everybody's existing here in the other realm.
So you can reach out and now if we were to talk to Mom and Dad, can they hear us?
You know, I don't have all those answers. There's a lot of things
right,
that by faith. But I'm just saying I believe there is a connection. I mean, I believe they root for us. They help us make better decisions, and you know, especially when they understand, you know, what this life is about. They get taught, you know, principles and progress, and they want us to be taught principles and progress.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Anything else?
Okay, and that's like you know, our families can be forever. I mean, like, you know, when TJ said she was sealed, you know, to his family, then that means that those ordinances are done, and he has that possibility, that promise, if she lives
okay.
righteously. If you sound
I'm
like a guy
too.
To me.
You sound like a guy. Wow.
Yeah.
No, TJ is okay. Teresa
Day. Okay. All right.
But that's
anyhow,
okay, Louise.
You've been
I'm
sealed
too.
To your husband and your children been sealed to you, right?
Right.
Okay. So that's sealing.
And my parents.
And your parents.
My parents.
Okay. So
me.
Your
yeah.
parents exist and everybody exists. That family unit's forever. So how
right.
in the world can you come back here and have that experience when you're sealed to that existence?
I got an answer.
No.
Oh no. Well, Dr. Michael Newton says that we are capable of sending a thread of our essence here into experiencing physical life, and a piece of our essence stays back for eternally greeting and being a part of that existence as well, because we are multidimensional.
But where do you get his information
having
from?
Many experiences, and he gets his research. I'll tell you where his understanding is. He's a hypnotherapist, and he takes people down into a deep theta level. He's been doing this research for over 40 years. He's trained over 1,000 therapists that are spread all over the planet, and they can continually report back their experiences in like this double-blind system and to his institute, and they are consistent across the board no matter what the spiritual belief of the individual, including non-belief, that everybody has existence on the other side, and they have their guide. Each person, each soul has its own guide. They have a council, and they go, it's akin to like group therapy. So after you come over and you're greeted by your family and you, your guide is there, and the guide takes you to their council, you have a review of your immediate life and kind of integrate that, and then you go to your family, which is between 10 and about 30-some souls, and you continually reevaluate your life you just had with the other relevant lives that were significant to this one, your interaction you have with your soul family, which is your family, and your family can change your relationship with each other. So in one life you could be married to each other, and next life you could be father-son to each other.
I don't know. I just go by what I'm told.
Continuing what
thought.
It's like to be. It's like a virtual role-playing, and not only are you doing role-playing, which is what we started this thing is that you can change the roles and you can be different things to each other.
You evaluate
how you treated each other. And then what you do, if say for example you did something really horrible with each other, you forgive each other and you merge, because that body is in this physical.
So we're gonna get a psychotherapy in the next world.
And then you keep going, and then you eventually decide to come back, and then you are helped with the decision of where you're gonna come back, what experience you're gonna have. It's a fascinating series of books by Dr. Michael Newton. I highly recommend it. To me, it was like the closest thing to proof, quote unquote. But there is no absolute proof. It's just all theories and conjecture. Because
yeah, like you told me, you read so much information and you want to, and then you accept whatever fits your.
No, I don't. I've been studying this as long as you've been studying it, and what we come up with it believing is, of course, our own personal choice. All right, TJ,
right.
We're like almost. Do you want to finish up here before we get cut off?
Yeah, but think about it, because your sister Louise has never met me, but she thinks I'm a man. Now, doesn't that confirm what we were talking about earlier with your brother? We were role-playing, remember?
Right.
All right, well, how do you know I'm a woman?
How do I know
you're
a woman?
I don't know. You remind me of a lady I met at the bus station one time. Or it. I call it it. I couldn't tell
who
I am.
A woman.
And I meant to see.
Now she
called
me it.
To me. And she had a similar voice to you. And I think you might be that person.
Oh, no.
You
TJ, were you in Pittsburgh at the bus station? Trying to confuse my sister.
Yeah, but she came up to me and says, well, isn't it really interesting that we're involved in the same thing? And I said, what do you mean? He says, you're taking care of elderly people, and this doesn't seem right what they're doing and all this stuff. And this thing started talking to me like she knows my business.
Oh my goodness. So that's paranormal.
That's paranormal. And that was that time when you took my car and left it in State College, and I had to take a bus all the way up there to get it.
I did that on purpose so you could meet this person and have a paranormal experience.
It was a weird experience, you know, and I oh, my God.
So what
like,
did you
nah,
learn
nah,
from
nah,
that?
Well, he says that the government's trying to do stuff to people and not find cures and all that stuff, you know. I mean, it was, like, unbelievable what this person was talking to me about, because it was all, you know, I was trying to save mom and dad.
Right.
And this
out of the blue, didn't know you from Adam, started sharing this information.
Right.
And you never made sense of it or what this was about. There was no way to make sense of it.
No, I did call, I forget what the name was, but I just talked to her a couple of times. Maybe it's a guy, girl. I don't know. I talked to it a couple times after that. She gave me a telephone number, and then I lost contact.
she, he, it, which would be shit. Sorry. Okay, I guess she didn't run time. Maybe we, a final word from each of us before we go. Bill, would you like to say something?
Yeah, I'd like to say to TJ that if she's going to write an RPG, that maps are very important.
Well, I was hoping you'd help me. When can we do this?
Well, see, that I, you know, like you're the one creating this world. I think you have to map this world out. That seems to be the.
Can I use this when we're on as the?
Sure.
Good, because otherwise, you know, mine always starts with a planet inside a galaxy, inside a universe, because that's what I know. So, you know.
And the other thing I need to point out before time runs out is that you need to decide what medium you're going to be in. Are you going to be in a pencil, paper, role-playing world, or are you going to be on computer?
I guess it depends on who joins us. Now, Janet brought up this. Let me have you. Can you write this down real quick?
Okay.
I'm not near any pencil paper, so somebody else.
All right.
I can.
All right. Write down Super Warrior. Super Warrior? Or
Super Soldiers.
SuperSoldierTalk.com.
But you got to look at that site, everybody. SuperSoldierTalk.com. That's a symposium that we're going to do about the government enhanced, genetically enhanced, modified, mind controlled super soldiers that are coming out and saying, look what they did to me.
Okay.
And that would be in March,
yeah.
In probably in Vegas. We're working on
what I would like to do
now.
Your commercial. Now, this wasn't to promote Super Soldier Talk. But Jamie got it in there anyway. She likes Lorian and what she's about. But anyway, the Super Soldier Talk, the reason you asked me was it going to be pencil or on video is I think it's going to be whoever the team players, because this is going to be a synergy team effort. And this guy, James Rink, can probably want to play because if you look, he wrote a book, but I was amazed at what a great video he made, Janet.
Clicked on it.
Yeah, I finally clicked. Not the one with the guy. No, I didn't click on that one. I went to one he made promoting his book. So apparently it's not here. So maybe but it shows where Bill, if you go somehow, none of these are it, I don't think. Maybe this is it.
Right, let's close because we're over time. We'll pick this up tomorrow. Let's have Louise have a final word, and then I got to go.
She's
always going to go fast.
I'm just saying there's a truth somewhere, and maybe we'll figure it out.
Sounds good. Good night.
Good night. Out there.
See
so
ya.
That's what
Bye.
They ended of. The X-Files with The Truth is Out There, and so Louise ends with The Truth is Out There, and I think that there's 7 billion truths, and that ultimately...
Now, Bill May can come back tomorrow if you said you want to continue it tomorrow, because tomorrow
is Bill
Alex.
So if you guys want to come back tomorrow, same time, it's whatever time it is for you, and we can have a family reunion part two, and we can pick up and have some more conversations, but I got to run now. So,
okay,
good
night.
Good night.
It was great. Good
night,
everybody.
Bill
we'll
Alec
see you tomorrow.
Will be here.
Bye.
Aloha.
Janet, tomorrow's Bill Alec. Jeez. Do you hear me? Tomorrow's Bill Alec. Guess not. Okay, folks. Well, tomorrow's Bill Alec from Phoenix. And I guess we'll continue with our RPG New Atlantis role-playing game. And it depends on how many people we get involved that want to help create this role-playing game. So we appreciate your time. I guess we're going to start with this new Atlantis being from back in the old Atlantis. And I guess they like to play the Enki roles. Enki speaks Enki and his sister. And then I guess because they're all into the Anunnaki and then the Latter-day Saint groups, like Louise, but what we can do is use the healers, and the creators and the artists and entertainers and with art, culture, education and create this folk life that we're creating on Earth in the social paranormal spiritual ET community, and we will put, I guess we'll put it, maybe we'll do paper and video. I don't know if it doesn't have to be one or the other. I don't know. But we're writing a new game of life, and we're calling it New Atlantis. And the Ascension Age will be part of it, an Age Folk Life. And we can have various groups that help protect the planet and protect the people and how we're going to take care of everybody on this planet. And we can have the various seven levels and the 12 or 13 dimensions, and we'll just decide how we're going to do this. And when the bell's the thinnest, like 12, 21, 12, and we can even have the 11, 11, 11, and how the various dates fit in and play out. And all this was brought to you by TJ Mars, ET Radio, and Ace Folk Life, and AscensionCenter.org, and TeresaJMars.org, and Learning to Help People through TJMarsEntertainment.org, and how we're all going to play out this life, which we do have the game of life going on, and we will be interacting with each other as humans on this planet, as we already do, but mainly we're going to develop a team that will help create a future. Now, whether it's real or in virtual reality, like Avatar, maybe we'll get a television show, maybe we'll get a movie, that we're going to go for a role-playing game right off, and we're going to use beliefs and perceptions, assumptions, moods, and expectations, and then how we make other people happy. We'll be able to give good kudos and little heart signs and pluses for attention. We gave that person appreciation. We gave that person affection. And then we'll go into how different people believe what is permanent and how we perceive our world and our object of perception outside of ourselves, so we can have interaction. And we can have, from the time we're baby and children, adolescents, and young youth, young adults, and then who we are, and we grow and transform into our identity. And then when we get into our adult identity, we'll play out the spiritual, emotional, psychological, and mental levels. And the existence that we share in this role-playing game is how we will watch our conscious evolving and expanding consciousness. And that's how we live now through the birth, life, death experience. And we're in constant flux. And I guess whether I'm a male or woman, I believe we're all male and female, and we all have our left and right side of our brains, and that the children coming to Earth now are going to learn to be whole brain thinkers inside what we've created in virtual reality. And they will be using computers all the time. And the smartphones is what we call them now. No telling what they'll be 20 years from now, but at least we're starting to rise above our past and how we've been stuck in one chakra, okay? And we've gotten to the heart chakra now. So we've sort of gotten through the lower chakras in this lifetime, and we're rising above, and we're causing that ascension rising. And that is how the diethyltryptamine, is that it, with the pineal gland? And some people think that 12-21-12 means that we're going to be close to solar flare, and that we're affected by that, and that everybody may be having the same trip. And I don't know if that's true or not. Personally, I don't like trips. I like to be in control, and that's one thing that I do here is I help people learn how to exist. And if you want to see sort of, my husband says it's bull hockey or malarkey, I'm not sure where I'm getting this diethyltryptamine. Let me see if I can look it up. Diethyltryptamine, and see if it is such a thing. Diethyl is just something close to it. I do this a lot. It's Wikipedia. It's a naturally occurring psychedelic compound of the tryptamine family. Its presence is widespread. Oh, goodness. I thought we had this part of our... Oh, it's Jesus drug, belief systems. I thought it was something we had naturally in our pineal gland. Maybe I came up with the wrong word. Well, I would have to get back to neuroscience, folks, and I sure don't want to be taking any drugs, either natural, psychedelic, or otherwise. So what I was talking about was trying to say what happens with the pineal gland, and I don't recommend trying to have get to where I've been and learn astral body or astral projection. Here's something that says diethyl pineal gland philosophy and the pineal gland science math. Somebody put this in the spirit molecule by Dr. Richard Strassman last year. Okay, that was in 2000. So maybe there is something to what I'm saying. Descartes and the pineal gland, third eye. I thought that's where we were all working in historical symbolism myself. Neurotheology, philosophy, and all of that. Everybody's about something. But just remember, we all have our own beliefs, perceptions, assumptions, moods, and expectations when we're working with other humanoids. And if you want to make somebody happy, attention, appreciation, and affection, just show that person a little attention and appreciate them for who they are, for being on Earth so you're not alone, and show them a little affection. What's it hurt? You know, we all love each other. We're all here together. We're all going on the same orb throughout, spinning through space at 18 miles per hour. So, you know, we can learn about how we're going to go forward. And some people believe in the crystalline beings, or crystalline beings, and it's like in the end of knowing, some of them come and take the children, they're called the crystal children, to other planets if we don't, and they this one gets burned up. So that's one of the alternative light timelines. And right now in the spiritual paranormal world, we're talking about various timelines. So that's why I thought maybe if we could get people understanding more and what they bring and who they are, if we give them a new role to play, we can teach some, including all these super soldiers. And anyway, I'm here 7 days a week. I've spent a couple more hundred than I had this month, which is unfortunate. But that's life when you're trying to help the world recreate itself, right? You know, nobody wants to say, I'll save the world, including me, but never say never, because you never know what the divine plan has inspired for you. So we just say, may the force be with you. And there's various people going to be working together and having conferences. And we'll be talking about various groups and the Galactic Federation, and Thoth, and God, and the Latter-day Saint Church, I guess, and all kind of other things. So it's, what we talk about is mysteries of life, paranormal, neuroscience, mainly social paranormal, spiritual synergism, I like that, when we all work together, and the ascension age of raising consciousness and awareness and metaphysics. And you know, I've been called a lot of things. Just don't call me late for dinner is what I tell people. I always wanted to be a comedian, so maybe I'm here to learn how to be happy and laugh, you know, or make other people laugh. I don't know. I love to feel good and be happy. So I tell people, if it doesn't feel good, don't do it. That's what a doctor told me once. If it doesn't feel good, don't do it. That's a good lesson, right? But then there are things in life we may not feel right about it because we have to do it, like wash our dirty underwear, clean the dirty dishes, or work on the car, or pay a lot of money out to get something fixed. And anyway, who knows? You know, we've got things we do to make life a little better for ourselves and others. So, you know, we just do it because it has to be done. But you know what? If it has to be done and we're doing it for ourselves out of love and respect to make our life better, so be it. You know, so we can tell ourselves, well, we need to do that. And it's good because we want to do it. So, if, you know, sometimes if things have to be done, we can just say, well, we feel good about that because we're doing it for ourselves or others, whether they're in your family or friends. You make somebody else happy. And that's what Deepak Chopra says, is the quickest way to make yourself happy is to find somebody else and make them happy. So you're creating, mirroring what you want for yourself and others, and it mirrors back, comes back tenfold according to spirituality and the Godhead and the God source. So I guess I will end that. You had Janet Lesson, Bill Thompson, and Louise. I don't know if she's married. I don't know her name, but she apparently was a Thompson at one time. So we'll just say they were all Thompsons of Avalon for the tonight's show and discussing role-playing, Avalon, Atlantis, all kind of stuff tonight. I don't even know what all we discussed. The crystal, whether it's real or not, the one they found off the coast of Florida, and if I'm going to be able to assist and use it to make the world a better place in our new role-playing game, possibly. So until tomorrow night, this is TJ Marsh signing off, and God bless. So thank you for joining us tonight, and we'll see you tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Central, same time, same station. God bless. May the force be with you. And good night. I'm going to close out of here. Let's just find the particular transporter so I can get out of here. Let's see. Hold on, and we'll just get me transported out of here. Until tomorrow night.
Out my name, and you know where.